Hey, everybody, and welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 37. We actually have a little bit of a schedule tonight, so we're going to try to go according to plan. But let me introduce everybody first. I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. And to my left is...
Adam Russell.
Justin Pinto.
Jim Beck.
Matt Lytle.
Jeremy Dan.
Joe F. Been reading comics since The Walking Dead was only sick.
Wow.
I don't know how to...
I'm sorry you have to follow that.
Sean Wheatley, live in from the West Coast.
Yeah, I know. This is Nick Borelli, at Nick Borelli on Twitter.
You're still blown away by the Walking Dead comic,
sorry,
right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to compute that.
Did I surprise you guys?
Yeah.
That means I'm old.
That was a shock. Basically, a little schedule you were talking to online about what to do. And Adam wanted to talk about the Fox News report that was all over the comic websites this week. We also decided we're going to spotlight a different character or team every month. And because of all the praise it's been getting online and in the store, we're going to do Daredevil this week. And then Joe F. has a, well, we call it a dissertation. He calls it a sales/popularity analysis. So everybody's giddy with excitement. So that's a text tone. Don't worry about it. But so we're going to, I'm going to link to the Fox News thing on the website. But we're going to just play the audio so you guys can hear it. So we're not kind of talking in a vacuum. And so the things we say are in context. So we're going to play it. Hopefully we can get the volume loud enough. But here's the Fox News thing.
Graphic violence and sex. That's what you'll find in the pages of DC Comics today. The comic book company just went through an edgy makeover. It's causing controversy among some fans. Fox 5's Sherry Lee has the story.
Today's comic superheroes would make Archie and Veronica blush. It's the new DC Comics. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. Love it or hate it.
They more or less darken the characters up. And today they introduce a lot of more reality into, like, you know, homosexuality, adultery. All that stuff is in the books now today.
Joe Blackwell started reading comics when he was 8, but they didn't look like this. Batman and Catwoman having sex on the rooftop, a drunken Bruce Wayne, or blood-splattered battles with heads whacked off.
You know, it's sort of like a fictionalized Playboy for kids at its worst.
Critics worry the once family-friendly genre has gone too far. Psychologists point out the overexposure to sex and violence for young children can encourage aggression.
I think too many kids would be put in harm's way, or at least at risk.
The female characters are more sexualized. One that has drawn attention is Starfire, shown here in a popular Cartoon Network TV series. And this is the same character in the comic Red Hood and the Outlaws, much more voluptuous and scantily clad.
That it's a misrepresentation of reality. It sends the wrong message.
The comics mirror today's movie superheroes. The original Batman TV show threw a lot of fake bloodless punches, but has since been replaced with a darker, edgier Batman. In the comic world, that sells.
I think they're just trying to push the envelope and definitely got people's attention for it.
Jared Smith, president of Big Planet Comics, saw an initial surge in sales when the new comics premiered, although some turned off fans stopped buying.
So it made a lot of people unhappy with it, or it was just something they didn't want to read.
The comic books are rated teen and teen plus, meaning they're not meant for younger children. So we went to a middle school to see what the kids here thought.
There's a lot of sexual activity.
How old do you think you should be to see this?
I guess like around 16, or be a teenager, I guess.
Scary. It looks like they're having sex, right?
Yeah.
Some weren't fazed at all.
Looks pretty awesome. Looks good to look at because has a lot of colors.
The images of bloody bodies are accompanied by ads for Legos and milk.
Why are we advertising for little kids in a comic book that's for rated for mature teens? What's going on here? What's wrong with this picture?
31 and 11.
Smith tells parents at his store these comics aren't for kids and points them another direction.
There was definitely a shift on some of them towards a, I'd say, a much more R-rated type of comic book.
don't expect that to change. DC Comics is banking. This is the future. Sherry Lee, Fox News.
DC Comics would not give us a comment for our story. Experts say the bottom line is parents need to know what their kids are reading.
The Fox 5 weather.
I think he just summed that whole report up right there.
Yeah. But
it was so funny. It was like a spoof.
Yeah, it was. The things I enjoyed the most about it was these are rated teen and teen plus, so we went to a middle school.
And the middle school kid said, teens should be reading this.
Right.
I like
wow.
the colors.
It's rated for 16 and above, and the kids said it's good for 16-year-olds.
So we took it to 8-year-olds.
If they think DC's
like, the
bad,
only one dangerous is them.
Well, not even so much Avatar, but my thing, I was writing down some notes just to talk about, but one of the things that they mentioned that is that it encourages aggression. I'm like, oh, but video games don't. You know, none of the, you know.
TV doesn't.
Yeah, it's just.
Well, everything in America is more sexual and violent now, so even, you know, our movies that are so-called comedies, you look at the movies like The Hangover and The Hangover 2, yeah. And, you know, it's
more
all
sexualized.
It's all sex and violence. Well,
and they also talk about DC being bad about sex and that. But didn't Archie just introduce the first openly gay character?
Well, not even that. But the one guy
not
starts off
sex on the rooftop.
Well, true. But he goes, they're darker. They're more realistic. They're introducing homosexuality. And I'm going, Archie last week had an issue where two men got married, and it's like, where's the Fox News story on that?
Marvel did it, what, in the 90s?
But no one cares.
Yeah.
No, it's Archie, so
right.
It's not a story.
No, it's just it's just sensational. Oh, my gosh, homosexuality in Batman?
It's like any medium that we have.
Yeah.
There's stuff for kids, and there's mm-hmm. stuff for teens and adults.
Yeah, but just...
This isn't rocket science.
No, but the piece was just so bad.
They played the 1960s Batman like they always do.
Yeah.
And then they said 8-year-olds, they said milk, they said Legos.
Yeah.
And the story they're trying to sell to us is comics are for kids, and this is not for kids. What's up with that?
The fact that they even did this story just is a clear demonstration that comics are popular again. All right?
It was a slow news day. They cashed in on the sensational headlines.
They had ads for this in D.C. for like a week before it even aired. My friend who lives in D.C. and Topless Robot, the website, lives in D.C. He said he saw ads for a week straight before every television program.
Like it was a huge expose.
Like it was a huge expose coming. And he said he waited for an entire week to see what was going to happen. Yeah. And then this is what they got.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah. I mean,
but it is funny. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I wrote down Starfire, you know, voluptuous, scantily clad. I'm sitting here going, did you see her first appearance? Her costume
that's
never
the
changed.
The funny thing is they use the Teen Titans Go as this right. is what Starfire looks like.
Yeah.
But if you look at George Perez's original Starfire,
you'd be surprised on what she looks like in the cartoon.
That's the thing. But the comics have been like this for over a decade.
Oh,
they've been
more
like
than
this
that.
For so long. Yeah. But it's because they're selling, because people are reading, that the news took the time to do a story on them. You know, the fact that the attention is on comics here and not on violent video games is that comics are popular.
All it takes is one parent to call the news station and go,
true.
Oh my God, can you believe how bad comics are? That's all it takes.
Let's go pick out a comic shop.
Yeah. But I also love the comment about they had sex on a rooftop, because I've seen that many times, especially when the first issue of Catwoman came out. It was on a lot of message boards. It's like, so you didn't read it, because it clearly took place in the apartment of a friend that she was staying in.
Scott's
I don't know. I'm jumping up to answer this time.
I think it's interesting that they even said to themselves that this comic book shop owner points kids to the kids section of the books, like there are books
which,
for kids.
Yeah,
which
is
exactly
what Colin does
exactly
here.
Exactly what there's a like Matt said. There's a kids section for kids, and there's teens for teens. I mean, is it DC's fault who advertises what in their comic
books?
Well,
and Colin even said the way a lot of those advertisements work is
and they get
DC,
every book.
DC buys an ad for milk, so you put that milk ad in
every
DC book.
Like Vertigo, DC, the kids' book.
Yeah.
And what kid is picking up these books and reading them for the advertisements?
Parents. Kids with bad parents.
That's
this
that's
is what
it
comes down to. Kids with bad parents are getting this stuff, and it's also naive news reporters. They think,
I think it's just the culture that believes that comic books are meant for children, period, the end of the story.
But it's naive. It's a naive reporter who should have said to the... Why didn't they say to the guy that owned the comic store, what is your typical patron?
No, you could tell how edited his comments were to fit what they were saying.
Right, I mean, because so they took it out of context, like the media always does. Right. I think this is just typical BS media story.
Whatever the, it just happened to be DC, the New 52 that was the big seller. It could have been anything, and they would have put a spin on it that, oh, this isn't
at least the good thing about this is, for the most part, the people that this new story is going to shock and offend aren't coming into a comic book shop in the first place, and, you know, everyone else, it's kind of whatever. Thankfully, we've gotten past the Frederick Wortham days. I don't think we're going to have congressional testimony about comic books.
Some teenage kids think, oh, maybe comics are kind of cool because they have sex and violence in it.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, some kid's going to look at that and be like, whoa, my parents don't want me reading comics. I better get to the shop.
Exactly.
Oh, be careful. You never know. In my lifetime, I never thought I would see a congressional panel get together to discuss music. So when I was...
Tipper Gore?
Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
So wow. Colin,
or baseball.
Yeah. As a retailer, is there anything that that makes you enforce the ratings on the books? Like, I know GameStop will fine employees if they sell a mature game without a parent or ID.
Not really.
That's a policy that from a company, though.
Yeah, that would be right. I know there's stores like in malls that like they'll take Vertigo and anything mature rated and bag them so that they can't just be flipped through on the stand.
You do that with like Tarot. And
well, Tarot really just because it's graphic, really bad. But I mean, like a regular Vertigo book that has a nude person.
But isn't really, at the end of the day, the only reason those ratings are on there is so that Marvel and DC can say they've done their due diligence and it's not their fault where the comics end up.
Right. And the other thing is my kids section is definitely segregated from the rest of the book, so no kid who's going to look at the kids' books is going to accidentally walk over and grab ageism. Deadpool Max. It's ageism, sure. All ages section, but... No, I mean, like I used to say, when I had the spinner rack, I said everything on the spinner was safe. It's a crapshoot when you hit the wall, because you never know what's going to be in what book.
Right.
How's this any different than a bookstore or a video store, right? There's family fare, there's middle of the road, PG-13
and
stuff.
And yet, would the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, something like that, exist for a bookstore? Not really. Yeah.
They fear they have enough lawyers where the comic book stores don't.
But there's no law enforcing it, right?
No.
Like, I think music, or not music, sorry, movies have laws that the theaters have to enforce that are not laws. I don't know if it's a law, but...
There's no law that says a kid can't come in and buy a copy of Tarot.
Right.
Yeah. Well, in the end, the parent
the
needs
tarot
to...
Law?
The Tarot Law? Well, there might be a Tarot Law, yeah.
Is there a law for the movies? Because I know movies are pretty strict about
like
partying.
Theater movies, and I think Walmart... cards on DVD sale. There are certain movies that'll hit up at the cash register, but I think some of that is by state.
I mean, they check your ID for cold medicine. So
you wonder if the Motion Picture Association of America has standards and then, like, do walkthroughs, and if you sell... Like when they sell a certain underage kid to buy cigarettes.
If
you sold cigarettes...
Put it this way. If
you,
it's...
Does
if
the
it,
Motion Picture have its own thing?
Would,
if
Diamond,
it's a,
would it, Diamond write you up for that?
No.
If it's a slow... If it's
should.
A slow news day...
Why?
If you sold if they sent a kid in here that was 12 and you sold him a copy of Tarot?
Well, I mean, that's extreme and I wouldn't, but...
that would be more local decency laws than anything.
Yeah.
And it's not to say on a slow news day that one of these days a congressman could get bored and draft up some crazy law on comic books, but the fact that...
I think what you're forgetting, though, is that they mentioned Red Hood and the Outlaws on TV. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What news market did that story come from?
DC. Fox News, DC.
Well, I mean, not surprising Fox News, but... I mean, I've had kids come in on weekends, and I've said, they're like, what can I get Batman-wise? And I've said, you know, Batman Brave and the Bold, and Mom went, oh, there's a Grant Morrison book. That looks better.
Right,
I'm like,
and it's just using
Mom says
judgment,
Grant Morrison?
Yeah, she picked up the trade and was looking at it, and I said, man, that's Grant Morrison, might not be great for your 8-year-old.
I had, like, this 10-year-old kid that loves zombies, and Mom's looking for something for him, and I'm like,
he wants Walking Dead, and she's like, no.
What a way to screw up an 8-year-old, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
giving him a Grant Morrison book.
And she's looking, I'm just like, it's not, you know, it's a horror genre.
And I know she tells the same story. She's upset, not that it happened here, but apparently what got him into Walking Dead is they were at a Barnes & Noble or something like that, and there was a Walking Dead trade in their all ages graphic
novels. Well, because it's a comic book, so they'll put it in the kid
got that and took it home and read it.
And that one, luckily, I don't think there was a lot.
Part of the value add is coming to your local comic store.
There you go. Knowledgeable salespeople.
But in the end, though, as I said, it's all about the parent who needs to decide what they're going to get for their kid. Blaming the comic book company. They're selling a product. If you don't know what product you're going to get, it's like going to get an alcohol for your kid and say, well, I thought this was water, you know?
If you're a smart kid, you don't let your parents tell you what kind of comic books you can read, man.
Yeah
that's true. Stand up to the man.
Okay. Let's move on. Thank you, Jeremy. Fight the power. Next up, Daredevil. I like the idea of the spotlight. Nick came up with some talking points. Look at you, Nick. He's out of control.
You can download his power presentation later.
Yeah. Well, ooh.
I was thinking about doing commentary on that little that news report, actually, because it's so funny.
It is. But Daredevil's in the news. It's one of the most well-received of the new Marvel books. What, we just hit issue 8, I want to say? Came out last week?
There was sex and violence in the last issue.
Yeah.
On a rooftop.
Oh, there was? Maybe it was on a rooftop. You know,
I don't think there's any good Daredevil books throughout history that are good for little kids.
Some of the Bob Brown issues probably are.
That's true.
Nick and I are a little biased on this one because I think Nick and I both have read every issue of Daredevil. They're currently stored in my basement. Oh, not Nick's, but...
Yeah. I know where mine are.
There you go. That would just be wrong. I guess my story goes way back to actually how I began collecting was through Daredevil, and that's what led me to learn that there were such things as places to get back issues, and that slowly led to a complete run of Daredevil through my dad's business trips. He'd always come back with them for me. So Daredevil holds a very, very special place in my heart, and I'm really happy to see a new Daredevil or a Daredevil book that isn't really, really bad. Because it got... The end of the regular series was bad. The Brubaker and Bendis stuff was really good until it kind of hit its descent in Shadowland. Or Shadowland?
Yeah. Shadowland.
And Diggle's run.
That was Diggle, though.
Yeah, no. And then when they announced a new one, I was moderately hopeful when I saw Wade. Paolo Rivera and Marcos Martin specifically made me very excited about it. And for the most part, it's been good. I didn't care for issue 7 as much as other people did.
Was 7 that standalone? With
7 was the kids in the school bus, and it didn't make sense to me.
It was pointless.
Yeah, just the kids were aimless until he started to fail, and then all of a sudden they banded together and were able to get him out of the situation.
It was a really good, like, feel-good Christmas story, but it could have been any hero. It didn't have to be Daredevil.
It was pretty horrible when all those kids just randomly started running in different directions, though. That was...
Yeah,
that's a bit much.
So, Nick hit a couple points I figured we'd talk about. The first one he has was, what's your favorite aspect of Daredevil? So I'll let somebody else talk. Nick, go for it.
Okay, well, my favorite aspect of Daredevil is I feel like he's the most human superhero ever. Bruce Wayne is a billionaire. He is a ninja. Sort of. He's the world's greatest mind. He's the world's greatest everything he does. He just does it, and he does it better than anybody else has. To me, that makes him... If he's not superhuman, then I don't know who is. You know, he's got everything. Where Daredevil, his superpower is essentially compensates for his handicap. He's not really superpowered in a way that any other character you think would be. So... I feel that just his abilities put him at a human level, but that's not really what makes him human to me, makes him really human. And that is, he seems to really have as many bad traits as good, like personality flaws that are just amazingly interesting for stories. He lies a lot. He cheats. He, you know, is single-minded.
He was his own brother.
These are things that... generally you think of as a villain, you know, but at the same point he's, you know, altruistic and he fights for what he believes is right to a degree that, you know, is silly. I mean, he will go as far as somebody can go. So to me, he is the human superhero of the big Marvel and DC characters.
I just like him because he's a lawyer. Yeah, it makes him awesome. Made me want to go to law school. No.
want to follow that because I feel kind of the same way. He's one of my very favorite superheroes because, and it sounds kind of hokey, but at the end of the day, he the way he is written is one of those characters that kind of gives me hope in humanity because he is a flawed person and he has all of his issues. And for all of the talk of the Parker luck with Spider-Man, I don't know that any hero ever gets as many raw deals as Daredevil does. He's never on top of the world. He's at best, he kind of breaks even most of the time. And yet, despite all of that, despite his flaws, he still has something inside him that, you know, lets him adhere to his moral code. And at the end of the day, he does believe, you know, in kind of right over wrong, despite all of his flaws. It's just kind of at the end of the day, no matter what he does, no matter what's done to him, he, like, finds a way to triumph over that, even if it's just for a little bit. And it's, I don't know, it's a very hopeful thing, and it's just something, for all the bad stuff that happens to Matt Murdock somehow, I always feel happy reading his adventures because I know that, you know, you can't break him. No matter what happens, you know, he just can't be broken, and that's a very, I don't know, hopeful thing for me.
I'm totally on board with what you're saying. Daredevil is the ultimate when life gives you lemons, make lemonade story. Like, at his core, he was made blind, but he got superpowers from being made blind. And then the way he's written, everything in his life goes wrong, and it's him taking this injustice that's been done to him and turning it around.
But isn't the everything going wrong in his life a everybody post Frank Miller? Wasn't his pre Frank Miller days a little happier?
Well, Colin, yeah. You read the pre Frank Miller.
They weren't
Miller
great.
Days. How did they?
They
compare?
Weren't great. I mean, he certainly had a lot of problems. I mean, a big aspect of him becoming a superhero too involved his dad's murder. So, you know, Born Again, part of Born Again was him finding his mother. I mean, it hasn't been light in, you know,
I mean,
like Spider-Man.
His mother just left him. That's as simple as that. I mean, you don't actually hear that story that often in, you know, comics where it's usually the parents die in grisly ways, and sure, Jack Murdock did, but his mom just left him.
To become a nun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the other way. I find actually the character, the power set, to be not really that interesting. For me, the attraction to the book or at different times was always visual. So it was more driven by the art or what was going on. And for me, I always felt like that within the Marvel Universe, certain, you know, their top tier, like Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, in the 70s, and when I started reading, 70s through the 80s, they had to stay more to the status quo just because those were the flagship titles. So if you wanted, if an artist or writer wanted to try something a little different or push a story to the extreme, that title was, you know, had enough.
That was a place you
could
do that.
That was a place those stories could be told. And we were talking before we started recording. I said one of the very few slabbed books I actually own is Daredevil 16, which is the John Romita Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it's also a photograph cover. Mm-hmm. So it's a photograph, you know, skyline in the background with the art on top. But at the time, you know,
right,
that, you know, you weren't seeing that. And the same with the, you know, you see acrobatics and things in the Spider-Man book, but not to the degree or not to the level of risk. Right, because Spider-Man can still always shoot a web, and he does have the proportionate strength of a spider. Daredevil's got a hook, and he's blind, right? So the level of
he can tell if you're lying.
that was one of the neat things in the last issue of Daredevil, where he and Spider-Man both jumped off a building and was like, "Meet you at the bottom," and yeah, they were kind of outdoing each other, and that was a neat part of that issue.
Well, that's what got me thinking. Got me thinking about that, but for me, like, I loved those Gene Colan issues mm-hmm. before, and I liked the look and feel of those books before I knew who Gene Colan was.
Mm-hmm.
They fit into that, like, well, I guess now I know, Tomb of Dracula, yeah. and those other kind of more yeah. Marvel monstery books that were going on at the time. But I've been in and out of storylines, so I'm familiar with generally what's been going on. But I came back with as a regular reader during the Shadowlands stuff, but then just kind of bailed out again.
I was going to say, what a dark time.
Yeah.
Sean, I would say you need to pick up Daredevil 81 and on and get the time where Daredevil moved to San Francisco.
Wasn't that Mike Murdock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Black Widow and...
Yeah, Volume 1, where he was being his own brother. Because he was hip and he was cool.
Was that Roger McKenzie?
No.
Those were the Daredevil Black Widow issues?
Okay.
Yes.
Those were always... Yes. Those were good issues. You could always trade like one Spider-Man for three of those issues.
No, okay.
Were not,
are those Black Widow issues where he goes out to San Francisco? Are those collected?
No, I don't think so. Marvel is really poor about their collection.
If it's not, not Frank Miller, they haven't really collected. No.
What about Essential Daredevil? Where's that up to?
They might be in the Essential. I think that's only up through like three volumes, so that might not be that high.
Daredevil. I think someone realized how long it would take them to reach Frank Miller in that, and they kind of stopped.
Wasn't that in the one Black Widow Marvel premium books? Wasn't one of those stories?
Maybe might have like been, but I don't remember. Not,
not the whole run. Yeah, that ran for a while.
No, definitely not the run. Yeah. I thought like there was an arc of it that was in might one have of been. Those.
Yeah.
Premium
right.
hardcover.
I always feel like the soap opera aspect of the stories pull me back in every month because, yeah, he's a superhero, but the guy's personal life and I read about Matt Murdock and it's like, what kind of problem is this guy going to have next? I remember with his wife, Mila Dearden, that was like one punch to the gut after another. It's like, oh my God, what are they going to do next?
If you're someone that knows the character, you almost feel sorry for that poor girl right from the beginning.
Like, don't get mixed up with this guy.
That was going back to the new one. Is a customer emailed me saying, put Daredevil on my list. I can finally read it again without wanting to take some pills and drink a fifth of Jack after reading the issue because it was dreary and
I'm glad the stories aren't so dark now, but there's still that aspect to it where it's like he's a superhero, but I want to read it next month to find out what's going to happen with the Black Cat.
See, personally, I liked it better when he was overcoming loss, because I think that's one of his biggest things. And in this current thing,
it just went on too long. That was all. I mean, it was dark after dark after dark after dark.
His whole history: his mother leaves him, his dad dies, he gets loses his vision. I mean,
but like somebody said, you got to give him a win every once in a while, and they weren't giving him a win.
The wins happened off panel.
Okay.
Otherwise, he's going to kill himself.
How many times has he been to jail? So am I imagining that story occurred a couple of times, or what did it just happen?
I only remember him going to prison once, and that was the switch. Bendis left him in jail as Brubaker was taking over.
That was right around Civil War.
That Bendis.
Probably the happy times that were built up to.
You're talking
really
like pre-Bendis, though, right?
Yeah, how long, maybe not. How long did that go on?
Maybe 8
He wasn't in jail. He wasn't in jail a long time.
I think it was an extended first arc by Brubaker. So I think it covered like two trades.
That hardcover just, or that trade paperback just came out today.
That was actually a great story where they, there was a counterfeit Daredevil running around outside.
You're jumping ahead on our points.
Oh.
Okay, well, speaking of that, let's move ahead. Favorite run. Mine's easy. It's the Miller Daredevils. I most enjoy. I probably need to reread them sometime. But.
Do you separate Born Again from the Electra Saga, or do you count?
Yeah, no, I'd separate. Yeah, no, that's definitely separate. I'm talking 158 through 191. Yeah.
The John Romita and the CD era, especially during Inferno, that mid-80s, late-80s, I love that.
Yeah, and it's neat. Anne Nesenti, who wrote all that... I think she wrote that.
Yeah,
so she's taken over Green Arrow, so I'm intrigued on Green Arrow just because of her. And she hasn't done it much since then.
She hasn't done very much since Daredevil.
Yeah. What's your favorite, Nick?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is the Miller. I mean, it's one of those, runs that people talk about and the best runs ever. I think the reason that it had a chance was it was similar to what Denny O'Neil did with Green Arrow and Green Lantern. Nobody cared about the book. So they let him just do his thing.
That seems to be when the neatest stuff kind of happens.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was kind of the same thing with my other, you know, it's pretty close to that, and that's the Bendis run. Even though there were some high-profile people on it, at the time when Bendis picked this up, he wasn't super high-profile, and no. He was still coming off...
This is really the book, that's the book that made him.
I think so. I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man's up there, too, you know, and they... Yeah. It was pretty much around the same time, but like I was reading Bendis when he was doing Caliber stuff. You know, I have all those, you know, so if, to me it was like an indie guy at the time doing Daredevil. And I thought, you know, this is going to be great. And the Alex Maleev art was just, I mean, it's just amazing because it's so different. You know, I really enjoy Alex Maleev's art. I think it's something that is very moody and fits Daredevil better than, you know, a lot of people. I don't think he can really do just anybody, you know, right. the characters that he does. He's like tailor-made for that character. But what Bendis did with Daredevil that I loved is that he just kept putting him in more uncomfortable places. You know, I mean, he'd put Daredevil through the ringer. And just when you thought, you know, it would be okay, he did something, you know, he would do something as a reaction that would be so extreme that you'd be like, geez, I don't know if that, you know, I'm still with him. You know, when he became the Kingpin in New York, you know, and then he was pretty much criticizing all the other superheroes in New York. That's some pretty interesting, you know, stuff that I think it hasn't been, you know, in the exposing of the identity. These are things that Bendis did on that run that are very modern and very interesting.
He never went with an easy out, like the revelation of the identity, the Kingpin of New York. It was just like...
complicated.
He'd throw it, whatever stuck to the wall, he'd run with it. There was never, you know, Doctor Strange making everyone forget his identity. It was like... realistic.
There were consequences.
Bitter about that?
What?
Bitter about that? Doctor Strange? Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
I like what you're saying about the Alex Maleev art, because there are so many artists that can draw Daredevil looking cool, but Alex Maleev did it so differently, all right? Because Alex Maleev drew Matt Murdock saying one thing and then thinking something else. Do you know what I'm saying there?
Totally, yeah. He played him off as, you know, this three-dimensional character, and I think that that whole book. The other thing that Bendis did and Maleev really hit home too was he built up this core of supporting characters that traditionally it was just when people wrote Daredevil, it'd be Daredevil and Foggy, Daredevil and Black Widow, Daredevil and somebody else. Well, this was a team almost. He had a team of people around him: Jessica Jones, Urich, Foggy. Luke Cage, Danny Rand. I mean, he had a whole supportive team, similar to what Brubaker did on Cap. When he took over Cap, he essentially made it a team book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all these different characters off on their own adventures, doing their own thing, teaming up, whatever. Every part of Daredevil was really fleshed out and made to feel like it was really important.
One of my favorite interactions. Actually, okay, so Alex Maleev and Brian Bendis are an excellent team. And if you ever read the scripts that Brian Bendis was giving to Alex Maleev, it's never more evident, all right? Okay, so to give you an example, there's like towards the middle, Daredevil and Black Widow, they're interacting, they're hanging out. Black Widow gets a call from Nick Fury, okay? I read through it and you know, by reading the story, looking at the art, I'm getting a sense that Matt Murdock, he still has a thing for Black Widow, and he's kind of jealous of Nick Fury, okay? In the back of the collected edition, they have the script. The script has all these details. Bendis writes out to Alex Maleev, in this panel, Black Widow gets a call. In this panel, tight close-up of Matt Murdock's face, where he realizes that he's lost Black Widow, and she's probably been dating Nick Fury. And they've likely had sex. Okay? None of this was described in caption boxes. This was in the face of Matt Murdock. Okay? Alex Maleev put this in the face of Matt Murdock. There was no words saying that he was thinking this. But as I read it, that was the sense that I got.
It's pretty awesome. That's like a movie director, you know, just instilling subtext into something.
Mm-hmm. Back to our earlier discussion about sex in comics.
Hey, now, don't bring
Brian
that
Bendis.
Up.
Brian Bendis put it in without overtly stating it.
That guy's going to send me to jail.
I will say, though, as much as I do love the Bendis work and the Brubaker work that followed it, and as much as I love the Electra Saga, Born Again for me is the absolute hallmark for Daredevil. Just, and it goes back to the whole idea. I don't know that for all that Bendis did to him, I don't know that anyone has ever put Matt Murdock through the ringer quite as badly as Frank Miller did. I mean, you have his, you know, long time unrequited love. That's becoming a porn star, selling his secret to get smack.
That's just
what
that
Frank wasn't Daredevil. It was his girlfriend.
The Karen Page.
But that's just what Frank Miller does. That's why they keep him, because, you know, he adds that little thing to it.
And yet he makes her, despite all of this, you know, Matt Murdock still, you know, she shows up at his door and he can't help but, you know, still be in love with her and help her and... You know, even though she sold him out, and the Kingpin finds out, and the Kingpin just destroys his life.
Where's Karen Page these days?
Dead.
Which is what, and...
Mm-hmm. Kevin Smith, everybody.
Bastard.
And you wouldn't have cared so much about that if Frank Miller hadn't made you care so much about her in Born Again. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, like, that to me is still one of the hallmark comic book stories. And I actually think David Mazzucchelli's art is just perfect for that.
We didn't need your help, Joe.
So wait, Kevin Smith, when he was writing this, he killed off this character?
Yeah, in Guardian Angel.
And very well?
No. Because...
At the time, it wasn't. You know, I think looking back, it's not as angry as it was, but Kevin Smith's run, that said, brought unprecedented attention back to Daredevil. Yeah. I shouldn't say unprecedented, but in the last maybe 10 years before that.
Because... Daredevil kind of peaked around issue 300 with that Fall of the Kingpin arc, and then kind of slowly.
Costume.
Yeah, we're getting to the worst.
Sorry.
Now you're the one jumping in. Drawn by local hero Scott McDaniel.
But despite the big ones, I do like the Innocenti, but that Fall of the Kingpin storyline is another really good one. Probably the last. Good arc from that era of Daredevil.
I'm just enjoying the run that's going on now. I never really read too much of Daredevil, just bits and pieces where I've seen him, you know, because he cameos a lot in different books altogether. But I've just been enjoying this run. I think it's just a fun book to you know, it's made me interested in actually going back and reading these books, because I never had that point to jump on the Daredevil, and this was that point, I think. And I think it was. It's a good point to just jump right on. It's a fresh start for Daredevil himself as the character and the book. So, but, I've been recommending that book to anybody who's been wanting to read it.
I'm going to take that Fall from Grace as my pick. Fall from Grace, which was Scott McDaniel drawing Daredevil in his red and gray armor costume.
The battle armor.
Yeah, and okay, so the reason that I'm picking it, every run that we've talked about since Frank Miller has been derivative of Frank Miller's run, okay? That run that Scott McDaniel did was derivative in a whole different way, because he looked at Frank Miller's current artistic style, which was Sin City, and he did Daredevil the way that Frank Miller was drawing Sin City, okay? And he kept in line with putting Daredevil through the ringer. And, the story was called Fall from Grace. He ended, I forget exactly what happened, but the art was unparalleled.
See, I like Frank Miller's art when he originally did Daredevil.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like Frank Miller's Sin City art, too, but since then. Cool. Number three, favorite supporting character. I have to go old school in Black Widow.
For me, it's Kingpin. Being a Spider-Man fan, you know, he always ties in the Spider-Man too, but I think he's just always been the big baddie of Daredevil. And I think it fits, you know, he's a really simple, non-superpowered, at least I don't ever remember him ever being superpowered, but
no, just big.
He's just a big guy. And, you know, wasn't he military trained or something like that? No. Maybe that was the movie
on the streets.
I'm thinking of. Yep. That's right.
Fort Knox.
Yeah, but he...
like you and Cannonsburg.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Adam Russell, superhero of Cannonsburg.
That's true.
Master Avenger of Cannonsburg.
Series, he was a military vet. but not in real continuity.
He's a purveyor of spices.
Yeah, he's just a businessman.
And the cartoon
show. He's an importer and exporter.
The Spider-Man cartoon show, they made him like a florist, didn't they? He really enjoyed flowers or something, if you remember that.
Well, like Rose.
Yeah.
That's his son.
I'm picking Foggy Nelson before anybody else Foggy Nelson is one of my favorite supporting characters in all of comic books because he, for all of Matt Murdock's flaws as a human being, Foggy Nelson is like the eternal optimist that represents everything that's wholesome and good. And, you know, it's like all of this stuff happening in Matt Murdock's life. And he always has Foggy there, no matter what, just be, hey, buddy, we'll get through this. And
he needs him.
Yeah, without Foggy, Matt would be a broken, I think, kind of lifeless. He just keeps Matt from going over that edge sometimes.
And that goes back to Nick's point about even Daredevil being such a real character. That not only that, the book is so real, though, feeling... And I think Foggy Nelson is a big part of that. You know, you don't have that many characters in a superhero book that are just a basic, everyday guy who's, you know, with him.
And the coolest thing about Foggy is no matter what artists do to writers and artists do to Matt, Foggy Nelson's character has been essentially unchanged since almost the beginning. Huh. Like, he's the same guy, even when Frank Miller was writing him, as what he was, you know, towards the beginning of Daredevil. Like, Foggy Nelson, that's how he's been almost the entire...
The compass.
Yeah,
he hasn't.
And he's just unchanged.
I think he's been wearing the same outfit.
And I think that says something about the character when you have some of these radical changes that some writers and artists do. Like, the one thing that you don't change when you do Daredevil is Foggy.
Yeah.
He was dead for a while, wasn't he?
Which the DC hasn't learned with Jimmy Olsen just recently with changing him totally.
It's kind of funny only in the respect that where the Constantine movie was bad, but the one thing they did that was unconscionable is they killed his buddy Chaz. He's the one guy. He's the one constant. He's got, you know, Hellblazer's Foggy. He's always there for him. And in the movie they killed him. I remember just going, no, you don't. That's, you know, the unwritten rule.
I'm gonna go with Elektra as the best Daredevil supporting character. You know, she's his foil. She shows up.
It's a special lot of event. Unrequited loves.
He did. So I'm thinking back. I'm like, why did I pick Black Widow? And then think about it. I think that's probably one of my earlier crushes.
Karen Page, yeah. Elektra, Black Widow.
I'm gonna go with Power Man and Iron Fist.
Okay.
I love that Bendis could introduce forgotten characters or kind of gimmick characters and make them relevant in a serious manner. Yeah, they didn't
took them from their exploitation.
Yeah, they didn't take over the book. They were used really well. It was the kind of thing that one of those fun aspects of comics, just not to flip through it and you're reading along. Like,
well, actually, Miller introduced them into that book.
And Dakota North.
Miller run. Yeah.
That I got.
Dakota, I thought Dakota North was a great ad.
I'm like, whoa, where did he pull her out of?
Yeah.
So. Those supporting characters that work with him in his sort of little clandestine unit, that I thought those characters were great. And the way he used them.
What you got, Nick?
For me, it's Ben Urich. He's just as complicated as Matt Murdock. That's what I really like about him. He's, again, a human character, a character that's not... you know, altruistic 100% is a liar, will take it upon himself to decide what is right. I mean, Matt Murdock is a lawyer that breaks the law. Ben Urich is a reporter that doesn't necessarily report all that he knows, that he keeps things from people for the better good. And, you know, he's very much cut from the same cloth, but an interesting... you know, character in sort of a pulp sense. You know, that Daredevil skirts the line between superhero and pulp character, and I think Ben Urich is more of a pulp character, you know, supporting character, and that, I find that interesting.
I was just thinking, he's almost kind of like Batman's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, he's that guy that knows stuff that he can talk to, but, you know, not on the same level or anything. Yeah.
Where did, what book, because Ben Urich's kind of thrown all over the place, what book did he start in?
That was during Miller.
Yeah.
That's when he was thrown into,
Daredevil.
I don't know his first appearance, but that was when he really came. That's when
53.
Yeah, when he discovered who the Daredevil was. Matt Murdock issue
distills everything Nick's talking about where he discovers
Daredevil,
and when he's watching the movie and Elektra stabs him.
Yeah,
his first appearance is Daredevil number 153. That was
okay. So it's
issue.
Five issues before.
First, he did appear in Spider-Man. Yeah.
168 is where Miller starts writing.
What was his first appearance? Yeah, Daredevil 153.
I just always thought his first appearance was in Amazing
Spider-Man. Oh, no, no. But that's,
I would have always figured that, being that he, Daily Bugle and all that. Okay,
so Roger McKenzie probably created him then.
Daredevil seems unique in that aspect that so many of his characters are borrowed or adopted from other books, and they work better with Daredevil than they would the characters they start with.
Like Kingpin made a much better Daredevil bad guy than a Spider-Man bad guy.
Well, they're all street-level villains, too, so I think there's some good overlap there.
Yeah.
You know, do you have a pick? I'm just curious because I'm the one notable person we left out.
Maybe Dakota.
Aunt May? No.
Yeah. Bullseye.
Gorilla Bob?
Well, okay, sure.
No, I'm just, you know, kind of, because he seems to be someone that gets picked a lot. So
he's dead.
He is dead.
Maybe. Sabretooth was dead, too.
Yes.
They've all been dead.
Ba-dum-bum. Okay. I guess, what do you put next, Nick? How do you feel about the book now?
I mean, this should be an easy one. It's great, and I think it's great. Similar, and this is a weird analogy, I guess, but the same reason I like the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon, after getting a version of a character for so long done so well, and not counting Shadowland, I guess, in this analogy, but just the version of a character done, well, the best idea is to distance yourself and say, there's another facet of this character, and I want to tell that, so it's not butted up against each other, so you at least get a fresh perspective.
But cool thing about that, though, is Mark Waid is such a gifted writer that he's able to keep aspects of Miller and Bendis into the story without making it totally, Silver Age swashbuckling. Like, it's a more lighthearted take, but there's still those aspects to the character that haven't got away, which is kind of nice.
No, I agree. I mean, there's nods to what just happened too.
Yeah.
And I think that's even, like, every time I see one of those, I get excited. You know, it's like
that one girl who keeps calling him Daredevil, and he keeps saying shut up.
And that awesome T-shirt that you can buy now that says I'm not Daredevil.
Yeah.
That's such. I want that shirt.
Oh, you can that he wears at the party.
Yeah. They actually sell that shirt.
I do have a question about the current storyline. That, not to give anything away to people that haven't read yet, but he has this one pretty impressive artifact that a lot of people want, and every time you see him with it, he's pulling it out of his desk drawer. Is that really the safest place to put that thing?
What is it?
It's
something.
It's very important.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Some sort of drive of some sort.
Yes, but that a lot of people want.
That's crazy
okay.
Information.
I'm sorry. Anybody else? Justin's reading it right now. He'll let us know in a minute.
Anyone?
So far, I mean, I think I'm reading the first issue. It does a great job of the limited information I know about Daredevil. As someone
it should tell you. No.
Never read an issue before the first five pages of this. It does a great job of recapping almost everything that you need to know about Daredevil. I mean, it does a great job of his history, of his who he is. I mean, it seems like a great introduction issue. And from what you guys were saying, towards the end, the Man Without Fear, the Black Panther...
We're about to get to...
Kind of didn't really do a whole lot of justice.
He doesn't bog you down with it. He's able to give you a concise...
Snippets. It's not like new action loaded with dialogue. It really gets to the point on a lot of things. The art and the way they write a lot of things, like the one scene with the heartbeats at the wedding, when he's trying to find, like, the way, he talks about his super abilities... see things. It doesn't
The really cool thing, too, with Mark Waid's scripts is the art does so much for the tone in that book. Because if you had, like, an Alex Malev draw that, we'd probably be sitting here saying it still reads like Bendis.
Yeah.
You know, with that darker, gritty... Yeah.
But even just the cover, I remember when we got that in as a poster, not realizing, not looking quite the detail. When you look at the cover of number one, you're looking more at the Daredevil. You're not looking in the background and the realizing flat, that the background is actually shaped by words.
Yeah.
And that's how he visualizes it. Anybody else before we get to the next part? Or the last part is low point. He's had a lot of low points. Yes. Mine's probably a little different than most. Mine is the end of Volume 1 when, for some reason, they chose to implant new eyes into him so that he could see. They also then physically changed his features so he could go to Europe and do some special mission for S.H.I.E.L.D., I think. And then they bring him back and undo that. And I just remember reading that going, why would you do this? Why Daredevil seeing
makes
no sense.
Why wouldn't you fix every blind person's eyes?
And then they undid it at the end, which also made
very
no sense. And I just remember that was
very
just
expensive.
And if it was done by S.H.I.E.L.D., why didn't Nick Fury fix his eye?
And then when I found, because this was pre and this is pre-internet, so I didn't know the series was ending and everything, and I just remember going, you know, and then when I found out it was over, I'm like, good. I can't take any more of that. That was horrible. So, Nick, what was your low point?
You know what? It was the movie.
Oh, God.
That's exactly what I was thinking. As someone who doesn't even read Daredevil.
I mean, I have other low points, but that was such a high point leading up to it, simply because Daredevil was doing everything right at the time. Bendis was on the book. You know, there was some heat behind it after Kevin Smith left. There was some, I mean, I actually enjoy the David Mack stuff and the art. I'm a Kabuki fan too. There was just a lot of stuff happening with Daredevil and everything seemed right. And I saw who they had on the movie and I'm like, okay, you know, I was willing to go in and it didn't seem like too crazy. Some of them seemed right on. And you know, the director had done good stuff as well. There was a Johnson, is it Steve Johnson?
Yeah, Steve Johnson.
You know, everything looked like it was could be okay, and it wasn't. It was really, I mean, the only thing, the best that movie is in the director's edition, or director's cut, because it has Coolio in it.
Yeah, okay. that's what I said.
I keep hearing that the director cut is better. I'm like, I'm not willing to pay the $10 to buy it.
Plus, that's Coolio in it.
Jennifer Garner as Elektra was the highlight of that movie.
Even though, even that wasn't, she wasn't what I in my head envisioned.
Elektra.
She wasn't exotic.
Red leather.
Yeah, she wasn't exotic. She needed to be exotic.
Jennifer Garner in red leather.
It was Bennifer.
Yeah, pre-Bennifer.
Although, what's his name is Foggy Nelson was good.
Yeah, that worked.
There were some inspired choices. Colin Farrell was weird.
Yes, very weird.
The best thing about the director's cut movie is it has like backstory that was actually, it seems, in a way, a little bit essential to tell why they caught the Kingpin at the end. At the end, he's just kind of arrested, and it turned out that there was a lot more to it than that. So I thought they shouldn't have cut that out at all, because if anything, it helped the movie.
Plus, they gave you a little more, like, character stuff on Matt Murdock. Not that...
Yeah, Matt Murdock actually got to be in the movie.
Not that Ben Affleck did a good job of presenting that, but...
The worst scene in that film is when him and Elektra are, you know, whatever they're doing on the bed. We're trying to keep this PG so we don't get arrested. But Daredevil hears a crime, and then he just ignores it.
Yeah. That.
Like, really?
Well, I remember in the beginning, the first case, there was a case and somebody got off, and then he went and caught him or something happened. But it had Daredevil as the prosecutor, which Daredevil's not a prosecutor. That's kind of the state's job. So they just, you know, they botched every aspect of it, pretty much.
I thought he was better in the Incredible Hulk TV series.
Oh, that was bad. Let's just put a bandana over your eyes.
Speaking of, no one will know
you're blind.
Daredevil supporting characters that did have Josie's bar with no Turk.
Oh, okay.
That's the bar he goes to. Yep. It was Josie's.
And to go back to what Nick was asking, it was Mark Steve Johnson.
I remember when the movie came out, the only thing I knew about him was he was the dude who did Simon Birch. And that was all that needed to be said.
I think the low point of Daredevil was the target. So, despite Kevin Smith's classic issues 1 through 8, we're still waiting for issue 2 of the target.
Stop waiting.
Yeah.
Stop waiting. Oh, you're not waiting? The rest of you guys aren't waiting for it?
Keep Kevin Smith away from comics.
Okay, so now, next segment. I have no idea what to expect.
This is so exciting. Popularity analysis.
We're going to Joe F.
You got to show Nick your printouts and your highlights.
So I took a look at the national sales data from the year 2011 and compared it to Pittsburgh Comics sales data from the year 2011 and also another local store, friend of the podcast, Big Bang Comics, who's more of, you know, Collins a little bit DC-centric and Big Bang Comics is a little bit more Marvel-centric. So we get a good slice of the national data, which is what retailers order, versus Colin and Big Bang's data, which is what retailers actually sell. So now, one thing that jumped right out at me before we get into any of this is that there are so much lower total numbers for every single issue. When you look at the total national sales data of issues actually being printed of the comics today versus the comics of the 1990s or the 1980s for that matter.
You didn't know that?
Well, you know, I never quite compared it. I never looked at concrete analysis. And, like, if you look at something in 1989 versus the print runs of today.
But, I mean, that was, like, a huge thing with comics is the speculator boom nearly killed the industry. So now getting these numbers.
Covers now.
Yeah.
True, we have variants.
Getting these,
but this is a whole different analysis. Why the print runs were double what they are now 20 years ago. But I started out looking at things in terms of numbers 1 through 25, the top sellers numbers 1 through 25 of the comics, numbers 1 through 100 of the comics. And also numbers 1 through 25 of the trade paperbacks and hardcovers, collected editions. So, you know, real quick, just some raw data. In terms of the top 25 comics, the national data had 6 Marvel comics in the top 25. The national data had 19 DC comics in the top 25. So comparatively, Colin had 5 Marvel comics in the top 25 and 19 DC comics in the top 25. So pretty close, all right? Big Bang, their numbers are a little bit different. They had 1 Marvel in the top 25 and 23 DC in the top 25. By the way, shout out to Dave. Thanks for posting your stuff online. I appreciate it. So in terms of the top 100, the national data had 29 Marvels in the top 100. And the DC, it had 71 of the top 100 were DC. So
Walking Dead didn't make the top 100 sales nationally?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And we will get into more detail on that when we discuss the trades.
So quiet
but
down,
no,
really.
Actually, as far as the top 100, actually, Marvel and DC are the only comics that ranked.
Are we supposed to hold all our questions
nationally? No, we can keep it as a discussion. It's a group podcast. But nationally, in the top 100, it's only Marvel and DC.
Walking Dead owns trade paperbacks.
They really do. They really do.
8 of the top 12 trade paperbacks for Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you.
Are you looking at my data or do you just know that?
Yeah. Did you get this off of? I looked at the top 500 issues from Bleeding Cool.
Yeah.
And the trades and stuff.
My source for the national data was ComicCron.com. That's Comic Chronicles. And they had a lot of cool facts about the past year. Like, actually, October 2011 was record-setting for a number of reasons. Like, the most comics in the top 300 by one publisher, that was DC, with 129 comics in the top 300. The highest dollar volume for comics ordered in a single month. The smallest number of different publishers in the top 300, which was 13. Also notable, the average price of comics dropped from $3.78 down to $3.69, probably because of the new 52's price drop. The
Nick, what's with the Unabomber look?
There's a well to the audio. No, just, you know, sometimes you gotta wear a hood.
Anyway, one thing that I really jumped on when I was looking at this data, when I looked at local numbers, Fear itself actually sold so much better than Flashpoint. So all the discussions that we did the past year, tearing apart Fear itself and talking up Flashpoint, did not cause Flashpoint to outsell Fear itself.
That's because our reach is so limited. We had a wider reach, we could have brought it down.
If Colin would have a TV show...
I missed all the fun stuff, so this is good.
So here's Fear itself outsold, the core Fear itself outsold Flashpoint here.
Fear itself 7, the whole way through Fear itself. Fear itself number 7 outsold any issue of Flashpoint in this store where we talked up Flashpoint more than anything else throughout the year.
Right, but I pointed out why.
Why?
Fear itself was a line-wide Marvel Universe book where Flashpoint was an Elseworld story.
The point I'm making is that no matter how much we talked... We couldn't down
that's
Fear
true.
Itself.
I'll give you that.
People bought what they wanted to buy.
I couldn't see that from even
but
if
I
they
know
didn't.
That, I never thought that we were influencing people buying.
Well,
we were saying it was a bad
I don't think
story.
That many people Maybe. Listened to this to influence
I do
sales.
Think there were some things
no
that...
No guys.
There's at least 16 people.
Yeah.
There were some things
I,
that
John
were influenced.
All
okay.
of it, but I... But what we have been saying is we didn't like the story.
Mm-hmm.
It still sold.
Well, locally,
ABX
though, I think the way that we talked up the tie-ins, okay, did help Colin's numbers exceed the national numbers on key tie-ins like Batman Knight of Vengeance.
We had anything
Flashpoint.
To do with it.
No.
Not the podcast itself. Maybe me at the counter influences.
Flashpoint isn't really an Elseworld story. I mean, it was an Elseworld basis, but it was a... It was kind of a bridge between the old DC and the new DC.
But not at the beginning. We didn't know that at the beginning of it.
You mean like...
they didn't know. We didn't know that at the beginning.
You mean like Crisis on Infinite Earths was kind of because it had Elseworld type feel, but
it just felt like it
was also
a
main continuity.
Well, but we didn't know. We didn't know about the new DC until...
July,
Flash,
right?
June or July, but Flashpoint started in like March or April.
Like by the time issue one hit, like maybe...
Unless it was issue 2 or 3 at the latest.
We knew about the latest.
I think we knew about it before issue 1, but it was like a week or two. It was like a week or two.
I mean, but is it...
Like, Colin would have already placed his orders before we knew about the new 52.
I don't know what the definition of Elseworld is, but
I think we learned...
No, we didn't know...
Flashpoint's definitely alternate universe.
We learned new 52 in, like, May or
June. June.
Typically, Elseworld is like Superman's Red Sun, but has absolutely zero impact.
I mean, that's what I said. I don't know if...
But going into Flashpoint, nobody knew what it was, and the feeling we got from it is that it was
going
to be an Elseworld story.
It's an imaginary story, like, outside of...
It was a Flash miniseries.
It's basically
absolutely.
Yeah, I would call that alternate universe, like House of M. Is House of M Elseworld?
No,
that's alternate universe
because it affected continuity to some extent.
And then
but
we're back on the
they're hard to
event and,
the Age of Apocalypse is an Elseworld, even though it did kind
they do
of
business
affect.
Slightly differently. Than
yeah, I mean.
I would in my mind, Elseworlds means it doesn't affect core continuity at all.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Kind of like what
that's
if?
That's just how I
yeah.
Yeah. I don't
what
want
if is like Elseworlds? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, what I just wanted to get like the terms down.
Oh,
so
sorry.
No, I just don't want to be
like,
debating semantics.
Like
you're really saying the same thing.
Like they used to make
like
stories, you know, where they'd make what if Batman were a pirate?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about with what if. I know exactly
what you're talking about. We already saw that.
But, and that's kind of what it was. What if Batman's mom didn't die or whatever
yeah.
it was that
what
sparked
if,
that
what
whole
if,
thing?
John and Martha Kent raised Bruce Wayne.
Now,
like,
here's the
like
thing.
That.
Okay.
If anything that I could see as an Elseworld book that was in there were more of the tie-ins than anything else. The main book,
yeah,
it was like a mixture, but... The tie-ins were really...
Yeah, what if Bruce didn't die?
Yeah.
Or what if Bruce did die? Things like that. Okay, go back to Joe. Sorry.
Oh, man.
That
you know what?
Fun,
actually,
though.
Something that was really interesting, you know what customers love the most is discounts. Half Price Trade was the number one seller here at Pittsburgh
left
that Comics.
In because it was so
amusing.
It was amusing.
Although I do attribute a lot of the sales of the New 52 outselling the Marvel issues that were in the national numbers. Colin did a sale that was so good that Rich Johnston could not resist picking it up and reporting on it.
Okay. After I told him after he asked if anybody was doing anything. But yeah.
But yeah, so I think that all the customers that took Colin up on his buying every issue of the New 52 are what pushed sales of titles like Animal Man, which did not chart in the top 100 nationally, to about halfway in Pittsburgh Comics numbers.
He's got a 30.
I bet you the Animal Man trade sells like crazy.
Yeah. That was one thing I mentioned to Joe. I think Swamp Thing and Animal Man are going to sell like
that book
crazy.
does not attract the casual consumer like a Batman book was. Mm-hmm. They go, who's Animal Man? Mm-hmm. And if you looked at the last two Animal Man miniseries, they were atrocious. So there hasn't been a good Animal Man since Morrison in the 90s.
There hasn't been a good Swamp Thing for a long time.
That's going to be a value price trade, too. It's like, I think that's 8 issues for $19.99.
Yeah, it's one of the cheap ones.
But, yeah, I think the trade sales of this stuff is going to be unreal.
And there was also a great sale you did with the... Right before the 1 and 2s had to be returned, you did 50% off any of those.
But I think I was looking at the numbers I sent Joe, and there was a drop-off from number 1 to number 2, but I totally expected that. But Swamp Thing and Animal Man have both stayed much higher than I think anybody could have believed. If they had launched as a regular book, hey, look, we have an Animal Man book, just in a random month.
Have the DC numbers stabilized for you yet?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends on the book. There's some books that people were trying and gave up on.
So, like Justice League, are you seeing major fluctuations?
No. Mm-mm.
I think Animal Man and Swamp Thing holding their numbers and actually growing is due to, you know, your location here in Pittsburgh, where, you know, we're a college town, and the fans and your customer base are a little bit more, they have more of a literary appreciation, and those titles go a little bit above... you know, standard.
Yeah, I mean, they're very different from your standard superhero books.
I think they were a very targeted audience who was probably in for the first arc as soon as they were announced or they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was in for both of those as soon as I heard they were out, and as soon as I heard the creative teams, I was in for at least the first story arc. So I don't think those numbers are going to change just because. People are going to, like, I tried Hawk and Dove. I liked Hawk and Dove, but I didn't like the take. I didn't like the art, so I dropped it. Whereas Swamp Thing is, they're Vertigo books with a DC title because they have an occasional superhero in them. And I think Vertigo fans are more loyal.
The most confusing book of this past year was Batman The Dark Knight, because issues 2, 3, and 4 were released 2 times. It charted multiple times on these lists.
Because volume 1 versus volume 2.
I think one of the most interesting books on this list is between Big Bang and Pittsburgh Comics is All Star Western. It's last of the list, and it's like almost in your half of the list.
But I push that to all my Batman people. Yeah. And one of the things I noticed when I sent Joe this stuff is that 8 out of my top 15 books for December were Batman books. Out of my top 10 sellers.
Well, that's because Pinto buys every
But I pushed All-Star Western to the Batman fans, and they pretty much gobbled it up.
And after last week, I went back and bought it,
I saw that on your list, and I'm like, I thought you got rid of All-Star Western. and you bought Red Hood. What are you doing?
And maybe I'm just missing it, but it doesn't look like a charted at all on this list.
I found it interesting that Big Bang Comics numbers, he has a customer base that really enjoys the video game tie-ins. And, you know, it
Arkham City at 19, I find baffling. I mean, I read it, and I thought it was pretty good, but to have your 19th best-selling comic is Arkham City number 105.
That says to me he's attracting a lot of casual readers that may have just gotten into Batman from playing PlayStation.
Or, as you said, 9. From video games.
Well, that was a dollar book.
But still, I mean...
His location attracts the...
But it was a dollar book.
In downtown Swickley.
Oh, I'll buy one of these for a friend. I'll give this to my grandma.
Beneficial to the casual. I'm walking through the mall Swickley. Crowd. Well, it's downtown Swickley. It's like you're downtown Pittsburgh, and you're just walking down, and there's a store.
There was a day where there was a Swickley party, like a Swickley downtown
somewhere that's clean and has upstale stores.
Yeah, it's like a little village
that you can walk.
Yeah, you're just gonna be walking down
Whereas here, you actually have to make more of an effort.
It's a lot
to come
like
here.
Mount Lebanon, Jeremy. It's a lot like Mount Lebanon, except like less traffic. Gotcha. Street traffic.
Okay. Yeah, like more $300,000 houses than.
Gotcha. You probably get gamers, teenagers that play more the games. More $500,000
houses. There's a lot of $300,000 houses in Mount Lebanon.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, what else you find, Drew?
Well, in terms of the top 25, things lined up pretty well. You know, what the retailers are ordering the most of, the customers are also buying the most of.
So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, because I just saw number 21 on your list, Ultimate Comic Fallout.
Yeah, and you know, those are the anomalies.
The thing about that is because they apparently somebody hit a wrong number on their printer, because basically for a while there, any book we ordered, we got a free copy of Ultimate Comic Fallout.
Oh, really?
And so, and that's charted in the diamond as far as they shipped that book. So, I've probably gotten 50 extra copies of that book.
Wasn't that the first appearance of Miles Morales? Yes. Stock up.
Yes, and it was bagged. But so that it's just funny seeing that on your list, and I'm laughing only because of that. That was one where that they've been sending,
which is not to say there wasn't interest in the book, but the interest died after about 2 weeks.
Yeah, the interest wasn't there.
Joe, core 616 Marvel book, what was the biggest non-event seller?
The biggest non-event seller is not on this list.
It's not a top 100.
We had, the biggest non-event seller, like, the biggest Marvel book was Amazing Spider-Man 666.
But right? That was the one with the retailer variant, so your customer, they had to order 500 or 1,000 copies.
Spider-Island kickoff.
I think that's skewed, that they didn't, that
Avenging didn't Spider-Man sell.
That'd be charted. Like Godzilla being one of your top
ones. Exactly, it's one Avenging on my top Spider-Man, list, but only
I
because.
I think was the next highest, and that was the number one.
Wow.
Because everybody at the time thought Joe Mad was coming back.
People
and he was
love
doing...
the 90s, what is up, bro? But you also have to remember... Mark and Joe work. Mad getting work, and Dana...
Well, people were hoping that if he came back on Avenging Spider-Man, he might finish Battle Chasers.
And Cable coming back?
I mean, people love the
90s. That made the list, by the way.
What's next? Bishop?
Battle Chasers?
No. Cable coming back, Avengers X Sanction.
Fair enough.
Yep. Okay. It made the national list. A lot of people ordered
Red Battle 52. Chasers.
Not a lot of people sold it.
Nick, have you read Battle Chasers?
Yep.
Okay.
Any good stuff?
I was into Joe Mad because he was on Uncanny X-Men, I jumped over there for the 9 issues that eventually came out from that series. And he also did some art on much loved by me card game Overpower.
I remember
Overpower?
I do.
I have a hardcore Overpower.
I have a couple shoeboxes full of
those
cards.
I went to a state tournament for Overpower. How about that?
Nice.
Wow.
I think we should have a special podcast as a nerd off, and we'll just see who can help nerd each
other. I don't want to make you guys feel sad.
I think.
Yeah, I know.
I think you guys feel good.
I think when you started nitpicking, Nick would beat me. I could make a go of it.
But let's make Nick the judge, because we should just all forfeit to him.
If we take everything nerdy from each of us, Nick has done it. I'm pretty sure. Or has it. Or so I can't. We can't compete.
I mean, I'm a big action figure collector, too, and I think that's a little bit worse.
Because this is the biggest order, right? Yeah, that would have been number one.
Yeah, customers Justice love League? Exclusives. The anomaly on Pittsburgh Comics top 25 was the Godzilla variant.
That's only because I had a special signing. We moved a lot of
I don't know. I have
one or two copies, signed and unsigned, perhaps.
Celebrity signing.
Yes.
Still on the show.
You guys want to talk about the trades?
Let's do it.
I thought the most interesting trade was Morning Glories.
Not surprised.
Well, one, it had a lot of buzz with Nick Spencer. Number two, it was $9.99.
Uh-huh.
So
Image
that, it's
does
an
this
easy,
a lot, don't they
do, and it's an easy
ones.
Sell. It's, gosh, I heard about that. Oh, it's only $10? That's, that's the price of, two or three books. Throw it on my pile. And so that was an easy sell. Number two is not sold as well.
Yeah. Was that a four-issue?
Image
was that
did in 2003 with The Walking Dead. They put them out.
Yes. Oh, that makes it so easy to sell. Yeah.
Was the first volume of Invincible a $10 one?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Because Invincible had kind of the same thing when it started as Walking Dead, just not quite to that degree, right?
Yeah. It didn't build as fast. But I don't think a lot of people remember that there was a little mini push from Image to do superhero books at the time. So it was Invincible, Firebreather, and Tech Jacket, and there was one that ended up being a little bit more popular than the other two.
Right.
Hey, Joe, before we move the trades, was there any non-Big Two single-issue books in either Collins or Dave's list?
In Collins or Dave's, there was.
Godzilla.
Outside of the trades, just...
Mm-hmm.
Godzilla and Collins list.
Walking Dead
Peanuts
doesn't,
and
Walking
Big Bang.
Yeah, Walking Dead really doesn't do...
Most of the people are at this point are trade waiters
that,
on that.
I probably sell as many trades as I do singles to that. I mean, but Image has other big books. I mean,
not big, big. You know, I mean, to hit these lists, the number had to be pretty big.
Or not,
I mean,
like a universal big book.
Yeah. No, I was just curious if
no,
Colin
I didn't.
Or Dave
I didn't have
one.
Any. No, and no. Yeah, I know Dave had Peanuts.
No,
Dave has Game
cake?
Of Thrones on no. here. Is Game of Thrones a
Game of Thrones is dynamite.
No, like kids'
dynamite.
Books like SpongeBob or
no.
Mega Man or anything.
But not big enough to make.
Well,
it.
You
I mean,
don't
this
you don't order those
turtles,
enough, right?
I mean,
Big Bang had turtles.
The thing about Collins was too.
One. Turtles not a kid book.
Is right. You did that New 52 sale where buy all the New 52s for $100.
Mm-hmm.
So that. You had, what, 30-some people
mm-hmm.
do that. So that automatically floats all his numbers at 37.
Mm-hmm.
Where if Colin orders 25 of a book, that's like a decently high number for
yeah.
you. Where you
yeah.
might order 25 of Game of Thrones for the variant.
Right.
But you're not selling 25 of Game of Thrones.
Most variants sold has to be Warlord of Mars.
Yeah. Well, just, I was going to say, just walk through and look at
Thank
some of
George,
the Dynamite books that are falling off the shelf. That are
but Dynamite does has awesome variants. I mean,
yeah,
you know, but that's just a thing. Like, you automatically sold 37 copies. I think it was 37 you
Something
had.
Brand
you automatically sold 35 copies of every number one right away. So,
yeah.
like, Blue Beetle was at 35. So, to sell 40... Of a Dynamite book or to sell 40 of something
right,
else
right.
becomes difficult. And that's if nobody else picks it up.
Right.
Where, you know.
Because, like, the Fear itself, it actually makes sense that those numbers are so high. Because, it's like Joe was saying, we were all complaining about it. But at the same token,
we were all reading it and buying it.
Every week, Fear Itself was in our bag going home. Because
yeah.
we were reading it and complaining.
We wanted
it.
To see how bad it would get.
No. Yeah, I'd read
do
it.
You
I'd
know,
say, this,
do you know? Do these Diamond Trade lists? Do they? They do not include like Barnes and Noble or Amazon.
Absolutely
no,
not.
No. Different different
yeah.
distributor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one thing I'm looking at. You know, of course, I guess we could. If Joel send them to me, I'll post them on the website so you guys can see them too. Because I realize you're not looking at what we're looking at. But I'm looking at like number 3 national trade sales includes League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 3, number 2 Century. I have that in my new comic wall, and I don't consider that a book. I consider
right.
that a comic.
I'm surprised Holy Terror is as high as it is.
I agree.
Like with this not including bookstores.
Well, I mean, shipping it, people bought. I mean, people ordered it.
Frank Miller,
who's sitting on it?
Yeah, but I mean,
well, yeah,
that's a whole lot.
That's
just
diamond numbers. That's not calling it.
If there's about
2,000
stores and they're showing 11,600 sold,
who diamond?
That's whatever number
yeah,
is showing here.
But
so.
That's people ordering. That's not what people
oh, that's
sold.
True. That
that's
true.
Not like
yeah.
a your number
yeah.
through the
yeah.
store. That's
no,
a diamond.
What about
that's still
Leviathan.
An average of 9 a store.
No, yeah, it's 4
is it
store.
Considered on
or no.
But then
11,
you think then you
divide
think,
by 2,000
and is it considered
store.
A trade?
Yeah,
and then you figure Midtown probably ordered 20 of them.
Call but other than that, too. I'm dead. I mean, Walking Dead has been huge. It's
Walking Dead
to be
number
huge.
One or Walking Dead?
All of them. I think almost all, everyone is on this
but
list.
But I remember when you did this list, you did a list like this last year, and Marvel trades have never charted well for you.
No, and there's none on here.
Because they're expensive.
Yeah, the price.
They're just, you know, it sells really well as issues. And then when the trades come out, they're pretty ignored. Where DC stuff,
and it's probably something where the Marvel fans want it ASAP in their
yeah.
hands. Whereas with independent stuff, it's a lot easier to say, "Well, I'm interested in this, but I might just get the trade when it comes out because I have so much other stuff that I read weekly."
The interesting thing about that is that Marvel's books are so well written for the trade. I find that I wouldn't have bought the whole trade, I would have dropped it if I didn't get to the payoff at the end.
It is an irony.
Marvel does read great as a trade.
Yeah.
Almost every Marvel event reads better as a trade.
And yet...
It's so frustrating. All these complaints are from single issues.
Almost everything does read better as a trade. Almost everything reads better as a trade because you can
days,
get the payoff
these days, yeah.
automatically. Like, I'm sure
you're in for the
Justice
payoff,
League
you can't
as a trade
it.
Is not going to seem as bad when you're waiting through an issue, and then you get to another issue and you're like, I'm still waiting, and then just read all 7.
But then
if
there's 6 issues of them introducing one character an issue, I may get
But you know the funny thing about that, Justin, is you know, Colin was joking. Colin's joking because one of the things I try to do is, you know, stock, put away the new trades and, like, keep doubles off the shelves as backup because we're, the shelf space is becoming limited. And it's like, it's reached the point now where there are so many trades out that just keeping them on the shelves is exceedingly difficult because I don't know if it's that they're not selling or just that they're publishing so many, but it's like all of a sudden it's just...
Well, you know how many you get a week. I mean, I make Jeremy do the table of the new trades. I make him organize that. Well, I don't make him. I ask him.
And it's
to.
Like... But, and the funny thing... The table. But the funny thing is those trades that I put out today... by and large, will sit there. And then when I move them to the new last week rack, that's moving. When they'll move. And if they don't move from there, they're most likely sitting on the shelves until there's a sale.
Mm.
And then when there's a sale, people don't even buy those. People buy that storyline from 10 years ago that they've always wanted to read.
Here's a point looking at Joe's national numbers, which I guess I hadn't looked at before. Dark Knight Returns is still number 11 nationally.
I bought it this year for the first time.
Yeah, Batman Hush, number 12. Watchmen. Year one, number 19.
Watchmen's probably in the top 50.
Watchmen, I want to say that market's been saturated. I think I sold one recently, and I was kind of shocked. Probably like right only here. Because I've sold so many.
But like V for Vendetta, once we figured out that you didn't have it in stock, you've sold it like four times.
Yeah, that was, thank you, computer.
I noticed on the shelf, I'm like, Colin, did you know you don't have V for Vendetta?
He's and like, American Vampire Volume 2, So
it's not a perfect system.
The second one I showed, I had one in stock when I didn't. V for Vendetta, the problem is it's the computer has a different code than Diamond
has.
Well,
that I can understand, because it's an older trade.
Yeah.
But
it was just a different code, so when it would go to reorder it, it would say not stocked.
But we joke because it's one of those things, how long was it not on the shelf, and nobody came up and asked.
Mm.
Right.
But as soon as I say, hey, Colin, you know, you're missing this, you've sold like two or three. It was just really funny.
You know what annoys me a great deal? Trades that have four issues in it. And the worst... is coming up. They just announced
and
Uncanny
X-Men
and Wolverine.
They're priced like a six-issue trade.
Yeah, well, Wolverine and the X-Men and Uncanny X-Men are four-issue 1999 hardcovers. Yeah. Mm. How is that going to compete with the new 52? Eight issues for 1999.
No. Extras? Sketches?
They did that with extras.
They're
going
to have to do something like that to thicken it up for
but
make it
but any more, that's
hardcover.
Like maybe, what, two pages? It's not going to be, you know...
I'm sure there's a foreword by Brian Michael Bendis' child or something.
The X-Men Schism hardcover was awesome. It was oversized, and the price was less than the total of the trades.
And that was how it was about 5 years ago. That's why everyone thought trades were going to dominate the market, is because if you were a trade waiter, the trades were cheaper than the issues at the time.
If that would have happened, though... It wouldn't have been that way because they make so much money because the material in the issues pays
for
the trade to be
that's
that
what
way.
They've done, though. They've raised the price to where it's the equivalent and sometimes more than the issue now for the trade.
Well, you're paying for that nice hardcover.
Yeah.
You're also paying for lack of advertisements in the trade itself. Like when you read the trade,
which is why I always thought it was ironic before.
I mean, I read a really interesting article about why manga is so cheap in the United States, and it's because almost none of it is generated here. It's almost always republished here after it was done in Japan, and all of the creative costs.
There's like horrible business practices
but all of the creative costs are paid in Japan when it's printed in issues and before it's moved over here. And I think trade should be cheaper to me because the artists.
They're reprints.
Absolutely.
They're reprints. Artists in the creative team should be getting. I mean, they get royalties off the trades, I hope. If they have a good contract, they probably are.
Yeah.
But they should be making. Marvel should be recovering. Marvel, DC, publisher, whatever. Well, should recover their production costs off a single issue.
Right.
The trade should be gravy. It should be like a DVD for a movie.
Well, you know, along those lines, we were talking probably 2 weeks ago about how there's all these classic Marvel things that are out of print right now. You know, like Infinity Gauntlet or something, is what came up. And I think part of that is because the most recent printings of those were the lower-costed thing. So Marvel has put those out of print because I noticed they're doing that with, for example, Dark Phoenix Saga. It's getting a new printing.
Right.
And they've jacked the price up like $5.
Yeah, but they put everything in it? Because maybe that's why they're charging more, because that original printing is missing.
Well,
something.
Marvel and DC, I've seen them both do that, where like No Man's Land went out of print for six, seven months because they were redoing
More specifically, right. Well, it hasn't been out of print, but like Long Halloween, they just came out with a new printing and it went up $5. One thing I was talking to Joe about is the collected editions of all the new 52, when I think it was the stuff they had to submit to Amazon, I think somebody printed on it, and the pricing they've nailed. It's like 6 and 7 issues is going to be $14.99, an 8-issue story arc is going to be $16.99. It's
which
like,
is what
I'm going to be able to sell that day
and
in,
and that's what
day
the price
out,
point was like 5 years ago.
Where
like,
a lot of the Marvel stuff, even of recent stuff, is really
that,
a lot higher.
Because that's what brought me back to single issues. I thought I had totally converted to a trade waiter, and I was just buying trades, and then the price of the trades slowly went up.
I think
and Marvel started putting fewer issues in them, which was kind of annoying.
That's kind of what they did. It used to be $15 for 6 issues, and all of a sudden it was $15 for 5 issues.
And it's not even the price thing, but when you put that few issues into a trade, then it doesn't sit on the shelf quite as well. And it's like, if I'm having that, I may as well just get the issues. Mm-hmm. And
now here's irony for you. Mm-hmm. A book that I would have expected to be high on your list isn't there at all, but is number four for Dave, Boys, Volume 1.
You know what? It's probably not that the Boys has... I've saturated...
I was going to say, you saturated your customers.
I don't know if I can sell anymore.
Ironically, tied for 26th were 3 Boys trade paperbacks
here?
For Colin.
Yeah. Okay. And I remember last year, I think 3 or 4 of them were in my top 10. So I don't want I can't say I've saturated the market, because they do keep selling. Guy just bought number 6.
You're
I'm
actually,
like, okay,
you
good.
I need to reorder one.
Okay, I haven't worked you too bad. But no, I've sold my fair share of Boys trades.
Surprised Superman Earth 1 didn't make it anywhere besides yours.
And
you did a big
sale.
That
was actually released 2 years ago.
And can you honestly?
Was it really?
Well, it came out around Thanksgiving last year.
Thanksgiving
so,
2010.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, these are 2011 numbers.
Yeah,
so it came out around Thanksgiving 2010. And that, to be fair, that number was at a discount because I had sold,
remember,
I know
sold
you
like
half of them at 10.
Right away.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, and they said, if you want to have it in time for Thanksgiving,
or for Christmas,
you have
I remember
or Black Friday, you have to order it today. So basically I said, well, how much will fit in a box? And they said 24 copies. So I ordered 24. Well, apparently my previous orders had satisfied the demand, and so all of a sudden I was stuck with, like, 22 copies.
And one I'm kind of sad to see up high, and I understand because of the marketing.
For me, it's national.
It's national, and it's not for Dave, but it is for you and national, is Batman Noel.
Well, I think that, remember, they had
that's why I said the adding
in every book. It came out at Christmas time, so it was like a Christmas theme book. I haven't read it.
It's a good flip book. Like, if you don't want to read and you just want to look at
you
amazing,
love his art. You
said I was gonna say if you want to second, but if you want to just flip and look at amazing art and not read
who
a story, Lieber
Mayo. He wrote it.
So if you just want to flip a book and look at great Batman art, highly recommend.
It's great for Christmas morning too. I mean,
you start a new Christmas tradition, sit around the tree and read Batman Noel.
That's what Adam did.
I did read it on Christmas Day as well. I did. I saved it.
On Earth 1.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed.
Barnes & Noble do a big push on that.
They may have. Biggest problem with that came out November 2010. Where's the next one? We're in 2012.
Wait, we're talking about Earth 1 now?
Yeah.
And
Straczynski's been working on that.
And
he
abandoned,
where is this?
He abandoned his action.
Yeah. Run? Come on, man.
Just on the Marvel trades, I wonder if they're just indifferent to it because Marvel's always pushing the digital.
I don't know if it's so much that, but the other thing is they print everything. Every book that comes out gets a trade, normally a hardcover and then a trade, and it's
too much. Some 80s and 90s reprints that make you kind of raise your eyebrow.
We got Strike Force Moratori today. Jumping off
the
show.
Don't get me wrong. Nobody demanded a Dark Hawk classic collection more than me. But
I will say the one thing I like
Marvel's
trade habits or whatever is it's predictable.
Usually within
a month or two after the last issue you get a hardcover.
Right.
And then usually a month or two after that you get a trade. Whereas American Vampire was a year between?
Yeah, well that's because it was still selling as hardcover.
Selling, but
One thing,
I like that predictability to know that
but
is it worth $5 to read it now? or wait 2 months and read the trade paperback.
Right, but that predictability, Brian Hibbs talks about that a lot, is you have the trade waiters. And it's like, oh, I'm going to wait and get that in trade, and that comes out in hardcover. I'm going to wait to come out in paperback. Comes out in paperback, well, you've moved on, and you end up not buying it at all.
He also argues that that publishers should not collect everything.
No, everything doesn't need to be collected.
Where did my four copies Aquaman fall on this list?
But I've also met Brian Hibbs and was moderating.
Well, no, but that's fine. But, like, I did not order
apologies, Mr. Hibbs.
Right. I did not order the Hercules Volume 1 Fear Itself hardcover.
Yeah, be a little discriminating.
I didn't think that needed a hardcover treatment. There were a bunch in this book
that about DC, where they're segregating, for lack of a better word, that these great titles are getting hardcover.
Right, everything
and
is
we're going to strike the trade on these.
Yeah,
because
no.
I disagree. I think everything should be in a trade.
I think everything should be good enough that it should be collected, and then it should be collected.
I don't think you're wrong.
I think everything should be in a trade. Should everything be in a hardback or an absolute or an omnibus? No. But should everything be in a trade? Yes. Of course, I'm also a fan of the original graphic novel and wish we saw more of that.
Yeah.
But I wish. Apparently in the minority.
I think part of I read somewhere about, like, once upon a time that part of the reason that DC is so scatterbrained has something to do with Dan DiDio and some tick he has about trades themselves. He doesn't want it to be the clockwork scheduler. It was something very strange.
I wish when we're talking about collected material and stuff that has become important enough that, like, the classics are worth a lot of money and you can't get things like Batman number one or Action number one or X-Men number one. You can't get these things. I wish when they started doing collected materials like omnibuses or chronicles, DC does the chronicles of characters, that they would actually pick a method and stick with it and finish it.
Well, that's Essentials and Showcase.
I mean, but Essentials and Showcase is all, like,
garbage
phone
newsprint.
Books.
I hate it.
Terrible. Give me something. Like, if you're going to do chronicles, if you want to do $100 omnibuses, do $100 omnibus. But do something that you're going to run through all of it. Because you get the Batman Chronicles number 10, and then you're waiting for 11, and you're waiting.
And
then they're going to reboot it and say, well, we didn't like Chronicles, so we're not doing the Batman Chronicles, we're doing Chronicles of Batman now, and we're going to start back at the beginning.
And I know Colin's heard me say this 100 times. I don't mind black and white art if it's drawn to be black and white, but those reprints of color art on black and white
is terrible. It's terrible.
I just can't.
In some ways, I like it better than on glossy print, though, because the newsprint accepted color so differently than glossy pages.
Oh, yeah.
You will sometimes read, like, Fantastic Four from the 80s, and you think to yourself, is Sue Storm's hair really supposed to be neon yellow like that?
You're saying stuff that was originally printed on paper should not be printed on glossy.
Right.
And I have no problem with that. However it was originally printed, that's what I want to read. I don't want to read something that was color in black and white.
Yeah, my argument,
give me the cover of the book.
So my argument, Joe, is Echoes.
On one page.
Echoes was all black and white art. I loved it.
Well,
but I would not want to read Captain America number one in black and white.
And, you know, you're kind of along your lines. I think part of the reason that Chronicles doesn't work for DC when, if you really think about it, that's the format that those archive reprints should be in, is they had the hardcover archives, so you get the really serious people that want golden and silver age stories. And those were like $50 a pop. And then they went from that extreme to the Showcase, so the masses could get it. So they kind of had saturated that market by the time that the format that most of us actually wanted came out. People were like, I don't want to buy this again.
And I think this is something else Marvel's doing right now. However, I don't think the price is right, but they're redoing all the Marvel Masterworks in trade. And they're not, I don't know how regular they ship, but it always seems like there's two or three a month coming out. I don't know.
That
is it an X1? Is it an X-Men every 3 months? Is it, I don't know how.
Yeah,
you would have, like, those in the archives, you wish they would have done in a trade format from the beginning.
Yeah.
Talk to Jen Grunwald.
But they're like 25, 20.
The last one I got in was 30.
Dear
30
for
starting 10? To get out of,
well, for
little 10, out of range.
10 issues.
Do you start that
paper?
Email,
but
Dear Jen, I love Cap Wolf.
The costs on that are really just the printing.
Colin, do you start that email, Dear Jen, I love Cap Wolf, will you please print such
it's actually not his daughter. I was wrong about that.
It's his wife, isn't it?
No, it is completely unrelated.
Oh,
really?
She is completely unrelated. Just
so she's in charge of the.
Yeah, she's.
I do think there's a Cap Wolf book coming.
Yeah,
she is
the trade editor or someone.
I always thought they were related.
I did too, and I saw on Twitter.
Apparently, everybody did.
I saw on Twitter one day somebody said,
"Right,
she's just." She said, "Actually, no, I'm not related. I just have an unfortunate." last name, you know.
Not unfortunate.
Well, it's unfortunate that she worked at Marvel.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And people think that, okay. Just not.
I do like Capel. I like Greenwald's Captain America.
Yes. Mad Bomb.
I like his Squadron Supreme.
The Captain, yeah.
That you guys ever read Squadron Supreme?
Oh, yeah.
I just remember the end where he was wearing the the armor because he was losing, and I remember coming into it at that going, what is this? And the arc
Bloodstone
was really bad
Hunt.
Too. I think we've run out of steam.
We'll call it a day.
I just want to shout out to Sean. I know he's up in Punxsutawney with his mom. Is in the hospital, so best wishes to Sean. And Ryan, you're still a punk. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll come up with something good.
When are preview orders due?
Preview orders are due tomorrow. Well, today, if you're listening to this, because I rarely get it up before midnight. So if there's anything... Well, no.
Thursday.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Than a bullet leaping buildings in a single bound. Came from out the shadows, cause that's how we get down. I'm in your town. Walk between billionaires and evil scientists. Sorcerer supreme, all the teenagers are buying this. Gamma radiation, nobody could mess with this. Hold steady with venomous symbiotes in my penmanship. Your friendly neighborhood MC back on the scene. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. All I'm seeing is green and red and blue. I hold the shield for America with a soldier out Siberia. Rocking any microphone that's near to ya. Clobbering it till in a coffin you sit. Agenda for extinction, bring out the horsemen of the apocalypse. Part of an evil brotherhood, acolytes that believe. Super friends who make beats and cats that MC. It's the area code to the planet that we protect. The Infinity Watch is now back in effect. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover, ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this. Because that's how we do it in the 616. Let my ruby quartz shades and my colored rings. Laser scope rifles ain't concerned with the mother thing. These rappers wanna talk about ice chains and fancy cars. Me, I'm trying to build mansion in Asgard. And from the Hellfire Society studio is Cerebro. Mind patterns and rhyme cause I rap about what I feel though. You hear the rhythm and you're hearing the track. I'm here to take it back to days of future past in my raps. I'm the Stan Lee of the streets. Demand things when I speak like your attention and respect when I jam these in the beats. And my tape deck pops, my mixtapes still rock. They're in your system, that's what Soundwave's telling me on the block. Ricky Bobby Drake's the only ice that I rock with. And mental telepathy is the only style that I talk with. Close your eyes, you can listen up in your mind. During this song, been freestyling there the whole time. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover, ducking, pressing the pigs. For all the villains that he's scheming on that doomsday tip. That's how we do it. Superpowered MC who can spit. That's how we do it. Superhuman on these tracks that I flip. Yeah, cause you ain't seen it quite like this. Because that's how we do it in the 616. Drop the beat out. I wanna go Pietro on these cats, right? Yeah. Spitting a rhythm that nobody's getting. I'm down to the infinite watches. The wisdom will baffle these women and children. I'm ripping tracks. I go Mark 5 with a power pack. Hawkeye, what I'm aiming at. Stop time, watch your chain react. Can't lie, I'm a brainiac. Little they know, I'm still in the show. I'm filling the streets, unlimited flow. The second of Doc Ock when I'm killing it, yo. Please, shots to your chest. You're rocking a vest like Cable did. I'm hungry as Wally West at a kitchen table. Nobody will save you, kid. I'm Frank with a gun. I'm Hank with his son. I'm Blob when I skip lunch eating rappers, man. So thanks for the gum. I'm Stark's wallet back before all these banks had a run. I'm Lex Luthor when I rap. I'm trying to blank out the sun. Cause all I see are friendly faces and shifty eyes. Keeping these anonymous commenters honest. Making them realize. You love to hate me on the net when I try. That's why you get no love when you're up on my block. Now, put your hands up like this. For all the vigilantes in the streets taking a risk. For all the heroes undercover.